Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
We are back.
I am back.
We are back.
We are back.
Yes.
Yes, we are. That is a factually accurate statement.
Yes, Andrea's got the reading glasses on today. I'm feeling that. Listen.
Sometimes it's dimly necessary.
It's dimly lit in here. I ain't gonna lie. I have tried reading glasses and they greatly improve my ability to see.
We just have to embrace it.
Yo, when I was younger, I just was like, how can people just go in the grocery store and come out with glasses, like, off the shelf? And now I'm in there like, oh, let me try these on. Let me try these on. Oh, yeah, this works really well.
But you can splurge a little bit and get you some.
Of course.
Non-grocery store reading glasses.
But in a pinch. In a pinch.
Can't do it.
This is what it's like getting older, my friend.
We're going to talk about that a little bit today.
Yeah, you got graduations coming up. For people in your life?
Sentimental ones. None that I'm attending that I know of. But, you know, at our HBCUs, not always, but oftentimes our graduations are Mother's Day weekend. And so we have that at my alma mater. So got some young folks I'm really proud of and wishing I could be there. But they know where my heart is.
Big shout to them. I'm going to be at the graduation for Raritan Valley Community College on Saturday. I'm the chairman of the board of the foundation, and I'm excited about that. That'll be my first graduation that I've attended as a board member.
So oh, how cool.
They've got me in a cap and gown.
You're
or some
in the
kind
regalia?
Of
you
something.
Got the stuff?
They got, they want to know how many degrees, so it's going to be
Is
cool.
It indoor or outside?
I think it's outside. It's supposed to rain this weekend.
Today. Okay, yeah. Well, good luck.
Thank you. And big shout out to all the graduates.
Yes.
So before we get started, I had a client who gave me an earful about our WNBA hot take. She generally felt where we were coming from, but she was like, brother, you got to get your history right. I was like, oh, history. She's like, there was already a women's league before the WNBA.
There was.
And they were already paying these women six figures. And the NBA bought that league out and made it into the WNBA.
Didn't know that.
To be able to control it, which further proves my point. Because the other day, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a major matchup in WNBA world that wasn't even televised.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yo, this same exact matchup 2 weeks ago had millions of viewers and now it's not even on TV?
Right.
Like, bro, like if
because it's the NBA playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they don't want to compete.
Right.
Yeah, they're afraid. But did you see that the WNBA is expanding to get a new franchise in Toronto? It just got announced like this
week. I had not heard that.
So I think things are changing. Also, there were a bunch of folks, like so many, I think like 2 million people watched the WNBA draft, which is a new high for them.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Caitlin Clark has sold more jerseys than like any other athlete.
Sure.
This year, which is crazy.
No surprise there, though.
And finally, there's a new collective bargaining agreement coming out in WNBA soon that's going to help these women to get a bigger share of their revenue. Because what's crazy, the WNBA today is worth $1 billion. It's doing over $200 million in revenue compared to in 2018, it was doing like 50 or 60 million.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the pay percentage for women is actually going down.
Right. So that was the part. Like some people were getting caught up in the actual dollars that the WNBA players were making compared to the NBA. But it's like as a percentage of the revenue that they're generating, that's where the real gap is.
Yeah, that's a fact. But yeah, big shout to all the historical women of the WNBA that really made that league a league. Big shout to let's see, Cheryl Miller.
Yeah.
Cheryl Swoops.
So you're saying they played in that league? No, they played in the WNBA.
I'm saying like the founders of the
WNBA. Oh, the
like
founders.
The women of the WNBA that aren't really talked about right now.
Right, right, right.
Because everyone's focused
those
on
those early days.
The New Jacks.
Mm-hmm.
But like we've had a lot of great stars.
The New Jills.
New Jills. Ooh, I like that.
Just saying.
So that's that. We're going to keep that convo going. We want to see some more pay equity in sports for sure.
I would like to see more pay equity everywhere.
Yeah. Come on.
I'm going to keep that going.
Come on with it. Yes. So, treadmills. Last week, we started talking about
the tuition treadmill.
And it made us think, that's a good, important treadmill. But there's a bunch of other treadmills that we're on as well.
Mm-hmm. So we got the work treadmill. Mm-hmm. Talk about feeling like you're never getting off.
Mm.
Maybe, sometimes.
We've got the tuition treadmill, of course.
Yep.
And then finally, we got the treadmill, the health treadmill.
The regular OG treadmill.
Yeah.
Trying to keep it all together.
So one of these treadmills, we've got to manage so that we can eventually get off. That's the work treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
The tuition treadmill, yeah, we got to manage that too.
It's optional.
But the health treadmill, my guy, like my girl, my Jill, my Andrea.
Oh, Lord.
We've got to stay on that treadmill.
We should.
And like we as financial advisors, we don't really talk enough about health.
We don't. I mean, it's trendy now to say the phrase health is wealth, and there's some truth to that. But we've got to focus on the things that we can control, and sometimes we don't. And sometimes we don't do it in our financial lives either, but we worry about the things that we cannot control. We fixate on those and don't give too much thought about the things that we can.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about all the treadmills today.
All of them.
All of them. We're going to start with that work treadmill because there's a lot of folks that just are not saving. You know, what's funny, I'm going to first start by picking on our entrepreneurs. You know, because as an entrepreneur, I will tell you, when I started my business, when I left corporate America, the first thing I thought about was just paying the bills.
Just getting by.
I thought about, how do I keep food on the table?
Gotta eat.
Then I thought about, how can I expand the company, bring on more people? And then I thought about making sure that they had food to eat as well. And I'll tell you what became the very last thing on the list has been retirement savings.
Mm.
And like I was one of those guys that every year was maxing out on 401k.
In your corporate life.
Corporate life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I ain't going to lie. I backslid after I started a business. And I
know
there's
others.
You go
with that word again.
Listen, backsliding. It happens.
Alan's in his repentance phase.
And so we got to talk about it. Like we're going to start with the entrepreneurs and we're going to get to the employed folks as well. But we don't spend enough time with our entrepreneurs. So I'm going to give you some stats. 80% of W-2 employees have access to a 401k, but only about 60% of them actually contribute. Adding those two percentages together, that implies that about 50% of people who work are contributing to their retirement plan. And 50% are not.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. They don't know what they're missing.
Yeah, that's a fact. But now let's go to our entrepreneurs. Only about 2/3 of entrepreneurs are actually contributing to a retirement plan. That means that 1/3 are completely not contributing at all.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's the entrepreneurial nature that just, I'm always going to bring in the behavioral finance element, but it's like, are you just kind of chasing the new shiny thing right now?
Mm-hmm.
So you just don't think about it?
I mean, I think it's priorities. Again, I think folks are trying to survive. I think it's lack of awareness. Like we speak to a number of entrepreneurs who just don't know what the options are. They just think, oh, I'm self-employed, so clearly there's nothing for me.
That they have options. Okay.
And then third, I think there's some folks that just don't have a plan, just like they didn't have a plan when they were working.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of folks just don't have a plan. Like one of our clients, we grew up together, and, you know, he's got a business, and, you know, it was rough for a couple of years. And now things are going better, but, like, he's still barely keeping his head at water, like above water, right? So how do you think about retirement?
Right.
Sometimes you got to expand your business, and maybe that expansion includes just making sure that there's extra money to go away for retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're focused on it right now.
So some ideas for business owners.
Yeah. So we have some of the same Retirement accounts, tax advantage retirement accounts, that's available to everybody, whether mm-hmm. you're a business owner or employed by somewhere else. So there's the traditional, the Roth IRA.
Yeah.
It's open to entrepreneurs too.
Easy, simple,
pretty
basic.
Much. Yep.
You can open an IRA just about anywhere.
You can. You don't need a financial advisor to do it. There's limits to how much you can contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people get stuck between this decision around, should I contribute to a traditional or a Roth? There's rules around that too. But mm-hmm. for the most part, it's pretty easy. It's simple. You can open one anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you can do it at a credit union. You can do it online. You can do it at a bank. It's not just about having the account and putting the money in. You also need to have some investments, of course. But at a minimum, you should be putting this money away into one of these accounts. Everybody can do an IRA. Everybody can do it. Not everybody can do a Roth, but just about everybody can do something, even if you're self-employed.
Yep.
Now, there's other accounts that are specially designed for people who are self-employed. The first would be a SEP IRA.
It's definitely easier to set up than a 401k, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about next, a solo 401k.
And a SEP IRA, SEP stands for self-employed pension.
Yep.
Here they go mixing up pension, like throwing pension around like it's going out of style.
All willy-nilly.
A SEP is not really a pension per se, but a SEP would allow you as a business owner, and this is really good for those who don't have a lot of employees, because if you have employees, you've got to contribute for them as well. But if you are, let's say it's just you, or let's say it's you and your spouse, why not set up a SEP? A SEP would allow you to put in up to $69,000 or 25% of your pay, whichever number is lower.
Yep. So that's a lot more. We didn't talk about this before. In a traditional or Roth IRA, you're limited to contributing $6,000 a year or $7,000 if you're over age 50. And there's some tax implications that determine whether or not you can contribute. But if you're self-employed and you have the SEP IRA, you, mm-hmm. you are able to contribute a lot more than if you were not.
Yeah. That's a fact. The SEP is like also easy to set up. Like Andrea mentioned, it's easier than a 401k. Like, by the way, a 401k is an option too. We have a number of self-employed clients who set up a traditional old school 401k like the ones that we're used to at big employers. Guess what? You could do that as a self-employed person too. But a simpler version would be a SEP, especially if it's just you and one other person, or you and say two or three people. It can be set up at a credit union, a bank, or an online institution as well. But yep. again, important to make some investments. And then finally,
the solo 401k.
Mm, I like this one.
So it's like any other 401k, except it's specifically for self-employed individuals and particularly helpful if you do not have any other employees.
I.e. the word solo.
Solo. Individual. Me, myself, and I.
Like when you're singing solo, no one can even hear you.
I just got that.
So the solo 401k, the thing I like about it, I mean, you can put away up to $65,000 if you're over 50. If you're under 50, $61,000. But what I like about it is that also it has the option of a loan. Like, I don't like when folks take loans from their 401ks, but I like having the option to be able to do it.
I'm with you on that. I often say that it's always good to have the option to borrow money from yourself. Yeah. So I don't like turning off or leaving people without the option to borrow money from themselves. Mm-hmm. We hope you don't have to do it, but if you ever get into a cash flow crunch, which some business owners and entrepreneurs might. It's not that you're not profitable, that your product, your business isn't doing well. Sometimes it's a cash flow issue. And if you're able to borrow from yourself and not have to owe anyone else, it's a nice option to have.
I will tell you, there's a number of our clients who are fresh out of corporate America and mm-hmm. they're starting businesses. And one of the first things they want to do is tap that old 401k or an IRA as a distribution. And we're like, nah, like,
penalties.
That's like the very last option.
Taxes.
Like, people really are too reckless with touching their retirement accounts. But certainly a withdrawal is mm-hmm. like, that's like touching the third rail. Like, that's really bad.
Yeah.
So that option of being able to set up a solo 401k and taking out a loan from there, just like with your regular 401k, you pay the money back over 5 years. You can borrow up to $50,000 or half of your account, and you're paying yourself back with your own money.
And I can't resist. This is why goals conversations are so important, because someone is listening to this and saying, well, which one should I do? And it really depends on a number of different things. And so if you are finding yourself asking those questions, which we talked about in a previous episode, but you really have to think about where you are currently and what your future situation might look like to help determine which one of these options is best for you.
Yeah. Because a lot of us are going to get old. My girl, I hate to tell you this. I looked at some stats, like our longevity is actually getting longer. You ain't old. Don't.
I didn't say I was. I said some of us. I didn't say I was.
But two people in this studio, so you ain't talking about me.
Well, we have listeners.
I was looking at these longevity stats. A man who's 45 years old today has an 86% chance of living until at least 65 years old. A woman of the same age, 90% chance of making 65.
We live longer.
So we got 90% chance of living a long time, and yet a third of business owners are not saving for retirement.
Yeah.
And half of employees are not saving for retirement.
So the thing about that is 65 is not even old, right? We're talking about the probability of living to that age. And there's a high probability, a higher probability than in the past, that many of us will live well beyond 65.
Oh, that's a fact.
So we're not just planning to retire. We're planning for longevity for sometimes two or three decades after retirement.
That's a fact. So I got to put you on the spot as a financial planner.
Yep.
Someone who has a certification in retirement planning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the letters for that? C-H-R-P?
Well, there are a number of them, but the one that I'm designated or have earned is CRPC, Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor.
Okay, so as a Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor, when you're doing a retirement projection, how long do you assume people live? Like, what do you like to feel comfortable with?
I plan to age 100.
Yeah.
And some people are like, what? I'm not going to make it that long. I'm like, but what if you do?
Lord.
How upset would you be with me if you live to 100, but we only had your cash flow projection going out to age 85. Mm. You got 15 years.
Nah, you 15 years just mad.
And you just mad.
Yeah. Feet hurting, trying to stand there at the Walmart, greeting customers, mad. You can't even greet properly. You're so mad.
The thing is, no one wants to run out of money, so you plan to age 100. And if you tell me you have longevity in your family, if we don't like what those numbers look like, then we have to make some adjustments.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather assume you're going to live longer.
Right.
Versus assume you're going to not make it. Like,
of course.
Yeah. So other ideas, business owners. So a brokerage account never goes out of style. This is an account with no limits. Also no true, I'm going to say, tax savings, except for one thing. Like a brokerage account, if I were to open up this account, a brokerage account is just like a checking account or a savings account. The only difference is you can actually buy investments in that account.
Mm-hmm.
So even though there's technically no tax savings, a brokerage account really is tax deferred, because if I bought something, let's say I went out and bought Apple stock. I'm just making up a stock. I'm not telling you to go out and buy it. I'm just saying, for example.
Yep.
Okay. Or Acme stock or XYZ stock. And let's say I held that stock for 20 years and I never sold it. I didn't pay any tax.
Right.
Now, look, if the stock paid a dividend, I'll pay a little bit of tax on the dividend. But I'm saying, like, you don't generate an actual capital gain until you sell.
Right.
And so it does give you some advantages to being able to invest in a brokerage account as well.
I love the flexibility of it. There's, as you said, there's no limits. You can put in however much you want to put in. There's no age requirement. Word. There's no minimum amount. There's no forced withdrawals.
Yeah.
It gives you some flexibility.
And nobody can say you can't touch it till you're 59 and a half. Because here's the thing, like a lot of entrepreneurs really value flexibility. Like they don't want to lock money up into something they can't touch until they're 60, because today they're 32 years old or 46 years old. And that brokerage account gives you that option. Like put some money away. Yeah, you don't get a tax write-off, but it's going to grow tax deferred until you start taking the money out.
Right.
So yep. You start selling stuff. So that's another account. And then the final idea for the business owner is maybe some of y'all can sell your business one day. Now, look, most people are not going to do this.
Like, most people don't want to do that.
Yeah. But like, you know, in the back of your mind, if you're building up something valuable, it's an option. I'll tell you from Momentum, I don't know if I ever shared this with you, Andrea, but like The other day, we got an offer for someone to. Sorry.
So you're going to tell me right now in front of everybody?
No.
You were going to sell the company?
No, just no. Listen. All right, let me
be quiet. Let me let you live.
So I don't know if I ever told you this, Andre, but the other day, like we often get people that want to buy Momentum Advisors. And mm-hmm. I've always said, like, I want Momentum Advisors to be a home for the black and brown and just diverse professional in the wealth management industry for the next 100 years. Like, that's really, really important to me.
You have shared that.
The other day, somebody, like one of these solicitations came that. In. And the person was like, hey, we have a company similar size to yours, and this sold for XX million. It was in the tens of millions, the multi-tens of millions.
You thought about it.
I was like, wait a minute.
You thought about it.
I don't blame you. It made me say to myself, well, what would the number be? It would need to be a number where everybody at the firm could walk away with millions of dollars. And that's everybody from the lowest to the highest.
So the number wasn't big enough.
It started to pique my interest a little bit. I can't lie. But I think I would much rather sell to the employees. Like, I'd rather do an internal succession plan. Young folks go out and take out a loan, you buy. Or we could do some cash flow financing. But I'd rather do it that way.
Mm.
Yeah, to make sure that the firm stays around a long time.
Now I see how you're thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, they might pay that same price that them people was talking about. But at least we're keeping it in the family. But that's an idea. But the reason why a lot of businesses are not going to sell, I mean, for one, a lot of businesses aren't set up to live past you.
Right.
Like, if you are the only person at the company and all the customers are there because of you, like, it's probably not a business that's going to sell for very much.
Right.
Only 30% of businesses that get listed for sale actually end up selling.
That low, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's low.
So the other 70%, I guess they just...
Either close,
they close or they shut down, they stop.
They give it away, right? How much do businesses typically sell for? They typically will sell for, there's valuations that get done and a lot of different techniques, but when you boil it down, most businesses are going to sell for either 1x revenue or 3x profit, annual profit. So if your business is doing $500,000, then maybe you walk away with $500,000 if you can sell it. And again, not every business can be sold. But imagine the person that's not putting away for retirement, but has built up a really nice business. They do have an asset that can sell.
That's their retirement
at some
plan.
Point in the future.
They're going to live off the proceeds from the sale of the business.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're talking about these treadmills, not just a tuition treadmill, but all the treadmills.
All the treadmills.
And so we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about these treadmills.
Let's do it.
I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back.
Yes.
Hopefully you enjoyed that break. Maybe you washed your car during the break, made a taco, I don't know, we're back.
That's a long time, but I guess you can pause. That's the beauty of this platform.
So we're talking about the treadmills.
Mm-hmm.
We should stay on this work treadmill a little bit longer.
Just a little bit longer. So when we talk about a lot of questions that we often get have to do with, how do I stay on all these treadmills?
Mm-hmm.
Which ones do I need? Which ones do I put money into first, mm-hmm. and why? So we always feel like it makes sense to put as much money as you can in these tax deferred accounts, yeah. where you're going to get some type of deduction or lower your taxable income on the front end. That's your 401k, your pre-tax, and maybe a traditional IRA. Some people won't get a tax deduction for that. There's income limits. But we also think your retirement isn't just limited to money in retirement accounts. We talked about that brokerage account again.
Yes.
Because at some point, while we're talking today about which accounts to put money in,
mm-hmm.
we're already thinking for you about where you're going to pull money from when you get to that point.
And on that note, if you want to retire early, there's a lot of folks that want to retire at 55.
Yep.
Where's the money going to come from, bro?
Exactly.
Sis? Like, if you're 55, you can't really easily touch that 401k without some tax complications.
Not at 55.
Yeah, not at 55. And so you need some additional accounts out there.
Yep. So when we talk about diversification all the time, sometimes people limit that to specific investments, like what you own.
Yeah.
we also talk people through
how to own it.
How to own it and where it is.
Yeah.
So we call it asset location.
She getting fancy, y'all.
It's not just allocation. It's not just what you invest
in.
It's what type of account
are
you using? Because when you go to pull that money out, it's going to be taxed differently.
Yeah. And that's the crazy thing about these taxes. Like, a lot of folks feel great. Hey, I've got $1 million saved in my 401k. I can retire. The crazy thing is, we did a show a while ago called That Ain't All Your Money.
Yes. I remember that one.
That ain't all your money.
I was living that.
That ain't all your money.
That was like, hey, I thought my investments were conservative.
Yeah.
And I'm just straight up losing money. And I'm like, no. You're actually earning money. You just pulled out like 20% of your account balance.
Yeah.
And so they didn't understand.
And you gotta pay tax on that, my girl.
And they came back again and dipped into that retirement account to pay taxes from the year before when they did the withdrawal.
Yeah. I'm going to just tell you like this. Every time you take money out of your IRA account, even if you're over 60, two people are happy.
No penalties.
You're happy because you got the money, but guess who else is happy?
The IRS.
Happy as heck. Like, oh yeah, because I get that. They're a silent partner in that IRA account, in that 401k account. Every dollar that comes out, you got to pay ordinary income taxes if you earned it at a job.
Yep.
So the 30% that you're paying in taxes right now that comes out of your paycheck is also coming out of your IRA or your 401k.
I look at it this way. The government is always going to get its money. So if they're saying, hey, you don't need to, you can keep some of that right now, you best believe they're going to come back and get it later.
You see what I'm saying?
So if a deduction up front means taxes on the back end.
So bottom line, fund your 401k, max that thing out, but also put some money away into a brokerage account. Think of that as one of your early retirement funds. Also, a Roth IRA is a great early retirement fund.
Yes.
A Roth IRA allows you to take out the principal that you've put in with no tax complications. And also, you could take it out before you're 60 years old, before 59 and a half. And then finally, the HSA, the health savings account, which gets no love.
No love whatsoever. The health savings account allows you to put money into an account to be used for different healthcare expenses. There's a list of what qualifies.
And that could be now or later.
It could be now or later. And if you still have money left over when you get to retirement age, you can use it for any other purpose other than healthcare expenses. If you still have a balance and you haven't used it for healthcare expenses when you get to retirement age, you can effectively use it as a retirement account, almost like an IRA.
Yeah, HSA, I look at it like it's like a Roth IRA for medical expenses, but it's also a low-key backdoor way of having long-term care.
Yep.
Meaning if I've got to pay for a nursing home one day, like this HSA can be used for that. And if, thankfully, if I'm healthy enough and I don't need the long-term care, it's just a regular IRA.
There you
go. At the end of the day.
You've lost nothing.
Yeah. So multiple types of accounts. I think we went through all of those. We should get back to the tuition a little bit. Because there's somebody that's been waiting with bated breath. Like, hey, y'all left me on the cliffhanger.
Right.
And I've been listening for like 30 minutes.
And we hit them with something new.
Talking about other stuff.
Yeah.
So in the last show, we talked a lot about tuition and how to put away for it. We broke down actually how to emancipate your kid, which was something that, you know, probably was eye-opening for a lot of folks. But let's just keep talking. So we broke down the new FAFSA formula, the SAI, and we talked about the formula for how student aid index gets calculated. There's a big emphasis on income of the parent, assets of the parent, but then there's a little fine print that says there are certain accounts that don't get included at all in the calculation.
Yep.
So, okay.
So why what
not,
are they?
Why not fund those accounts?
Why not?
So hold on. Like this is helpful. Like the more money you put away for your retirement, the more it's going to help you on your student aid index. More it's going to help you on your financial aid application.
So effectively what we're saying is money in retirement accounts and other things like annuities, perhaps cash value life insurance policies, they don't get included in the SAI formula.
Yeah. So run those up. Like, put a lot of money into those. So, like, the person that's diverting today money from their retirement account, like retirement contributions, they're instead putting it into money into a college fund, you're, like, double hurting yourself because you're avoiding building up an asset that doesn't count for student aid index, and you're adding to an account that does count for the student aid index. When in reality, your kid might get a scholarship. Like, you might not need all that money anyway. And so you don't want to have a really high student aid index. And so you want to make sure you're mindful of that. This notion of a whole life policy, like, we should do at some point a whole show on whole life. Like, we're not fans of whole life for every single person, but right. for a specific subset of y'all, whole life is a great option. And whole life is building cash value, and some of that cash value can be borrowed against for college. And that does not impact the student aid index. That could be a powerful planning tool for somebody.
It really could be.
Next, who owns the 529 plan matters?
It absolutely matters. So it's helpful when the 529 is owned by someone other than the parent of the student.
Yes.
Grandparents, aunties, uncles, mm-hmm. someone outside of the household.
Godparent.
Because
trusted godparent.
Trusted godparent. Because when those assets are not owned by the parent of the student, they are also not included in the student aid formula.
Come on.
That's pretty powerful.
And it used to be in the old financial aid world, like literally a year ago, grandparents 529, as they started to make distributions, it would have an impact on the EFC, the effective family contribution. That's mm-hmm. the old way of doing it. But now they've changed it. This new Simplification Act has changed the formula, the mathematics, and now it's way easier for someone outside the household to own that 529 and have it not count. So for the new parent out there who's got the bustling baby boy or girl, and you're planning out that kid's future, and let's say you've got a great relationship with your parents, or there's an aunt or a godparent that you're really close to, why not have them fill out the paperwork for the 529?
Yep.
Name your kid as the beneficiary, and as money is contributed there and is built up, it never has any impact on financial aid in the future.
Sounds pretty easy, and it makes a lot of sense. Now, I know at least one person out there, though, is going to be thinking, or maybe it's just me. So if someone other than myself as the parent owns this account, and my kid is the beneficiary. Mm-hmm. What happens if we fall out? Because yeah. you can change the beneficiary on the 529.
It's not to say it's without risk. Like, yo, it's got to be someone that you really trust.
It's like, you know what? I didn't get a Mother's Day text message from you, goddaughter. So,
yeah. That's the fine print, my girl. Like, yeah, you can switch the beneficiary and change it to someone else.
Yep.
So you name the uncle who is the bachelor with no kids. And he's the owner, and 15 years later, he's got his own kid. I mean, technically, he could switch that.
I think so twisted sometimes, but yeah it's a thing. But yeah. it's probably not a thing for most people. But
I would hope your mama wouldn't do that to you.
I would hope your mama wouldn't do that to you, but
your brother? You
know, my mom would not do that.
My mom definitely wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You trying to say my mom would do that?
No.
Don't we talk about my mama?
Not talking about on your here? Mama.
My mama's sweet. She would never do that.
She is. She definitely
thank
is.
Thank you. My parents love you, by the way.
It was really, do they? They know me like that? They listen.
My mom has listened to the podcast.
Aww,
she likes you on air.
Mrs. Boomer?
Yeah.
That's sweet.
And my pop?
Tell them I said thank you, because my parents have not listened to this.
Yeah. Did you even tell them?
I did. I tried to take my mom out for breakfast this morning.
You can't just tell them. You got to actually load it up on their phone and say, listen to this.
Yeah. You know what? My bonus dad, he would listen. If I send it to him, he would listen.
Yeah. The funny thing
is, no one else in my family is going
to
listen to this.
But if you send it to someone, you got to warn them first. The biggest warning you got to give is like, yo, it's like an hour long. So like, this ain't no quick thrill.
Right.
Like, a lot of times people send you links. What's your time? What's your like time span, your attention span if somebody sends you a link?
Audio or video?
Either one.
It's shorter for video.
Okay.
Video is like 60 seconds.
60 seconds?
All right, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So
you know what's funny? One of the earliest complaints we got about the podcast is like, we would put up a little teaser video. Hey, we're going to talk about X, Y, and Z on the podcast. Make sure you listen in. And somebody was like, I'm 10 minutes in and y'all haven't even gotten to it yet. Like, yo, this is like, yo, this maybe we're not your cup of tea.
Right, right.
This is a slow burn.
I have a higher tolerance for audio because I can do other things while I'm listening.
Like not listen?
Like no, not I can attention. I can do other things. I can do my hair or, you know, something else, you know, in a week that I'm not in the salon.
but audio. So what's your audio time frame? Somebody send you a link, audio link.
I'll see it through if it's good. It just might not happen in a consecutive block of time.
So they could send you the full audio book of Moby Dick and you're going to sit there?
I will pause it and come back to it when I don't have anything else to do. Wow. But it might take me longer to get through it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Prayer request. Someone's like, yo, pray for me. When do you get to that?
To the prayer request?
Yeah.
As soon as I'm able.
When?
Within 24 hours.
Okay. Do you always remember everybody?
Usually I do. Yeah.
I'm usually like, Lord, I pray right now for everybody I said I was going to pray for, and I can't remember who it was. Dear Lord, Father God, I know He hears me.
It's the closer I am to the situation, the more immediate it's going to be. But usually there might be a quick something, but I have to like write that down.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get back to this tuition trip.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because somebody's mad right now. Like, yeah, they're getting off the point.
Yep.
I gave this more than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So have you ever heard of this thing called superfunding, a 529 plan?
I have.
Have you done it with clients?
I have not.
I'm about to do my first superfund.
Okay.
Like this year. I'm cool. Excited. I'm a little nervous.
I might need to super fund with my second one, but I have to figure out where the money's coming from.
You're a money machine. You're good.
Changed the beneficiary to the older one, so she doesn't have... No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
We thought about it, though.
Remember, fair is not equal, and equal is not fair.
This is true.
So superfunding a 529 is when you take multiple years of gifts into a 529 plan and spread them out over 5 years from a tax perspective, from a gift tax perspective, but you give them the money right now. So every year, the maximum that you can give to a 529 is actually the gift tax amount, which is $18,000. And we don't talk about this a lot because most parents are not putting away $18,000 for their kids. Now, if it's a married couple, both parents can put away $18,000. So that's $36,000 that could go into a 529.
They could just self-fund. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, if you got that kind of cash, yeah, maybe you don't even need a 529.
Right. But then you wouldn't get the gift tax exclusion.
Yeah. So a super fund is when you take the $18,000 and you multiply it by five. And so one parent can put away $90,000 at one time. Mm-hmm. This concept of super funding is good for a couple different scenarios, right? Imagine the person that suddenly has the money.
Like, you know that was going to be my next question, right? Like, who's this good for?
Yeah, they suddenly have the money. Like, they, you know, have always loved their kid, but never really had the cash, and now they do.
Yep.
And, like, they could put in a little bit of money right now and do, you know, like the $400 a month type of thing, but they really want to catch up.
Yeah, the entrepreneur who may have struggled from a cash flow perspective in those early years, and then the business takes off. So now you have income like you've never had before.
Or the woman who's finally getting her equal pay.
Well, look at that.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
She's got that money now, that cash flow that she never had before. And so that's actually the client I'm talking about. Like, she switched jobs. Her income went up by like 4X.
Wow.
And like now she's got the cash flow to be able to super fund where before she was worrying about making ends meet.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Is this a prophetic story? No, I'm just... I'm joking.
Listen.
I'm joking a little.
It's contract negotiation season at Momentum Advisors. It's the collective bargaining agreement time. But imagine for a minute a grandparent. Let's say there's a grandparent that did something like sold a business or just has a bunch of money and they want to do some planning, right? A grandparent, let's say a two-grandparent household with a bunch of grandkids. Imagine there's two grandparents and let's say 10 grandkids.
I am absolutely sending the file for this episode to my parents. Except they have 9 instead of 10.
9.
Including great-grands.
Be fruitful and multiply.
I
love it.
Blended family, but that, it's all good.
That example of the grandparents with the 10 grandkids, they have the capacity to give away $3.6 million to their grandkids for retirement. They could put everybody through college. And all that money can grow completely tax-free. As long as it's used for college expenses. And there's the ability to switch beneficiaries, right? As one kid gets a scholarship, then they move it over to the next kid.
On to the next.
Now, I'm not saying everybody's grandparent has $3.6 million, but I'm saying somebody out there can take advantage of this concept of superfunding a 529 plan as a way of playing catch up. Now, you want to make sure you don't overfund. I mean, although they've made a lot of different changes to how the 529 can work, you can use 529s now for primary school, not just for post-secondary school.
Yep. They capped that at 10K a year, though.
Yeah.
But I'm saying at least but it's still, yeah, something. They've expanded the uses.
Yeah. And also part of the Secure Act 2.0, starting this year, you can take up to $35,000 in 529 plan assets and roll it over into a Roth IRA for that same beneficiary without any tax penalties. There's a lot of limitations, so be sure you do the research. It has to be in place for a number of years before you could do it. But I'm saying there are options for folks that have set up 529s, yep, and they don't have a need for spending the money for college,
right,
expenses.
You're not going to be penalized for it.
Yeah. So going back to the Superfund, so it's really 5 years worth of gift taxes that you're averaging into 1 year. So if you do this, if you do end up giving in 1 year more than $18,000 to a 529, again, it can't be more than $90,000, you do have to fill out a tax form called IRS Form 709. You file that, and they always, and what's funny about this is, like, let's say I wanted to give $60,000. You still have to average it over 5 years. And so if the next year you want to give more money, you have to be mindful not to go over that $18,000, because they're at, like, the $60,000 divided by five is like, that'd be like $12,000 per year. So if the next year I wanted to give more, now I'm kind of capped at $6,000 for that year, because that brings me up to that total of $18,000.
Right. You got
to
spread it out.
Yeah.
Basically.
So Superfunding is an idea. Other ideas, apply for the FAFSA early. It's a little late for applying early right now, but for next year, for those parents,
yes,
who's got, like, I got a kid that's a junior in high school right now. Like, yeah, hey, as soon as that window opens, yeah, start on that FAFSA.
Yep.
Also, other ideas for the tuition treadmill. There are a lot of grants out there that are not income-based. For example, there's a grant called the Teach Grant that is for aspiring teachers, and it gives them an extra $4,000 a year, and there's no income attached to it. No, the parents could be making $1 million a year.
That's awesome.
And your kid would still qualify for certain grants. So I think don't make that presumption that just because you make a lot of money,
right,
you can't be eligible to receive grants.
Correct. You may not, we talked about this before, you may not qualify for federal aid, but there's other awards and opportunities that you can pursue.
Yeah. And
what then if you don't become a teacher, though?
Oh, see, I think they bring you out back and whoop on you.
They flog you. Probably right. Becomes a loan. You got to pay that back, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I know this is unconventional. Normally we would pause the show right now and get to the next segment, but I want to make sure we don't skip over this. There's a bunch of schools that are designer schools, and I'm calling them designer schools. They don't call themselves designer schools, but these are schools that have a couple things in common. Number one, they've got a lot of people paying full tuition to go to these schools, mm-hmm, out of pocket. Number two, they have really big endowment funds.
Large endowment funds.
And these schools have decided that they are going to help their students to meet their financial needs. So that gap we talked about last week, if your student aid index is $30,000, but the school costs $100,000, you've got a $70,000 gap. There's a handful of schools that say, look, we will make sure that you can meet 100% of that need without any loans.
That's beautiful. Expand your search. Expand your college exploration.
We're going to give you a couple of these names, but we're going to go on our social media and send this full list out. I'm going to give you just a couple. Brown University, where Andrea, the illustrious Andrea Gray, her son attends.
Yes. It's interesting how that comes about, but yes, it is one of the schools. And I looked at these schools, because I'm an accountant. I checked off which ones we applied to and which ones he was admitted to. And there's quite a few.
Columbia University. Yeah. Yale, Princeton, you notice a lot of these are Ivy League schools.
Yep.
Big endowments.
They are.
They're giving out a lot of aid. University of Pennsylvania, other really big schools that are doing well.
Let's talk about some of the non-Ivies. Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these schools are in the Northeast. Swarthmore,
yep,
right over in Pennsylvania. Williams College.
Yeah.
Northwestern, MIT, Johns Hopkins. These are top-tier schools, but more importantly, they have super, super large endowments.
Vanderbilt, Stanford, Johns, yeah, Hopkins. Like, these are great schools. And the thing is, like, I think for a lot of kids, they're probably not applying to some of these schools because they're like, oh, there's no way I could get in. Or even if I got in, my parents can't afford it. So I'm going to just apply to my local,
right,
college.
We count ourselves out.
Yeah. I'm saying, like, apply to some of these designer schools.
Yep.
Now, look, I know this is crazy coming from two HBCU grads. I'm still a proponent of HBCUs. And by the way, now is a really incredible moment with HBCUs because a lot of them are flush.
Yes.
I just saw a huge donation to FAMU in the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan State got money from Jeff Bezos' ex-wife.
Yeah.
A lot of these schools, a lot of HBCUs have a lot of funding now, and so they're making scholarships possible. But I'm saying include these designer schools and these HBCUs in your list.
Yes.
And you might be surprised.
Expand your horizons.
That's it.
For more options.
So that's a tuition treadmill.
Yep.
We're going to go to break. We come back, we're going to talk about
the OG treadmill.
Yes, the real treadmill, the treadmill yes. treadmill.
Yes.
I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
We are the Momentum Advisors. We'll be right back. It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
Thank you so much for listening to the Momentum Advisors Show. This is Sean King, founder and CEO of the North Star. If you want to hear more shows like this, featuring black and brown voices on the most important issues of the day, head over right now to thenorthstar.com to discover all the podcasts we have to offer. We have over 500 different episodes from 6 different podcast series, and they're all great. Check them out.
We are back.
Yes.
I'm tired from all these treadmills.
Well, we're talking about the one that makes us tired.
Yeah. Health. Your health treadmill. This is one you gotta be on. You gotta be focused on. Like, there's no point in having millions of dollars in the bank, a successful business, tuition paid for, if you're dropping dead early, if your legs are all swole up.
Or the quality of life is just not great.
Yeah, if you're on a million medications.
It's not fun.
Like, God bless you if you're in that situation. And I hope that you get healing. I hope that the medication works. I know that God is a miracle worker. But I'm saying if we can avoid it, wouldn't we be better off?
We would be. And trust, we fully understand that everything concerning our physical health, our mental health is not within our control, but a lot of it is.
Absolutely. So let's talk about some stats for a second. First of all, is obesity. You all know obesity rates are on the rise. It's estimated today that 42% of everybody over 20 years old is obese. 42%. Then you start talking about race and gender. For black people, that number is 50%. Half of us are obese. For Hispanics, it's 45%. For non-Hispanic white adults, it's 41%. We go to women, it's 42%. This is now everybody, Gen Pop women. And then for men, it's 39.8%. Obesity is like an epidemic that nobody's talking about.
We do talk about it, but we tend to talk about it in a way that's judgmental or not positive instead of focusing on, or maybe it's shallow because it's based on yeah. appearance or things like that, without focusing on desired outcomes.
Yeah. I will say we are set up to fail when it comes to our health in this country. And I say that because a lot of our foods are unhealthy. Like, yeah. for example, did you know that the milk that we consume in the United States, cow's milk, the way it's pasteurized and put in your grocery store. American milk is banned in Japan, in Canada, in New Zealand, in Australia, and the European Union. It's banned for health reasons.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
We have a lot of foods that are banned in other countries. I'll just give you some examples. Coffee Mate.
No, not the Coffee Mate.
Coffee Mate. Is that one of your jams right there? I would say put milk, but the milk is bad too.
Because Coffee Mate is like a mysterious substance, but I can't lie. That's 2 teaspoons of that in my coffee every day.
Coffee Mate, Ritz crackers, Pillsbury biscuits. These 3 items are banned in Switzerland, Austria, Hungary, Denmark, Norway, Iceland, all because of the trans fats. Okay.
I'm sad. I'm sorry.
I'm just keep going.
Me sad.
Wheat thins, Frosted Flakes. These are like everyday snacks for people. In fact, I thought wheat thins was like a healthy snack for somebody. Banned in the UK, Japan, parts of Europe, because they have something called BHT, which I'm not even going to try. Actually, I'm going to try to say it because it's going to be fun. Butylated hydroxytoluene, which is a flavor enhancer. Can you say that for me, Andrea?
Butylated hydroxytoluene.
Now, listen, if it's that hard to say, like, should you be eating it?
We don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't want no butylated hydroxytoluene. Like, I probably have been consuming it for years.
Sure.
It's killing us. Our beef.
The coffee mate, though. I'm sorry. I'm stuck on that. I'm stuck on the coffee mate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beef. The beef that we consume in America is banned in a lot of countries because of the hormones that we inject into our cows. Right. So what I'm saying is a lot of our health outcomes are kind of like set up poorly before we even start. We might try to eat healthy, but like if the stuff they're giving us is bad, we're already off to a bad start.
It's systemic. By the time it reaches you, it's so ultra processed and overhandled that it's nowhere near its original state.
And then we get into genetics. And a lot of people say, well, it's my genetics. Like, I can't help this. And I think that's true for some people and some conditions. But, like, we've got stats that say that genetics is not the thing that everybody makes it out to be. It's not 100% of the reason why folks are dropping dead early.
Correct. So I went to this retirement planning summit last month, and there was a session that talked about the advances that we've made in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And are we name dropping? Am I going to give credit to the author?
That's up to you.
Dr. Argus, A-R-G-U-S, he led the session. Okay. And I fully expected it to be a session on health is wealth.
And Doc, by the way, if you're listening, man, go ahead and drop the check and, you know, you'd be a sponsor of the Women Advisors Podcast.
Hey, you know, I have his contact information, so we'll see. But what he pointed out, he's a physician, a board-certified physician, and a best-selling author. And he shared with us that 6% of longevity is genetic. That means the other 94% is in our control.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, exercising is one of those things. I will tell you, I learned recently. So my son, like, this is like true confession. My son passed out. I don't even tell you this, Andrea. He passed out at his chorus concert.
Baby boy?
Baby boy.
What?
Singing his heart out. Started wobbling, hit the deck.
Just.
And we took him to the doctor, and we took him to the hospital in an ambulance, which was very alarming for me. I was at my NYU reunion, my 20th reunion. I had to leave early. But the doctor was explaining how blood flow works. Like, mm-hmm. you know, your heart is pumping blood out to all your extremities, but it's fighting gravity to get blood up to your head,
mm-hmm.
right? And also, as it's pushing blood down, it doesn't have the strength. Your heart's not pulling the blood back up. The way that you send blood back up is by moving, mm-hmm. right? So if you're standing still and you're, you know, singing, like,
yeah, you're extending.
Yeah, you got blood just sitting in your legs.
Yep.
Right? And you're singing your heart out. You know what I'm saying? So it made him pass out. And so what it reminded me, though, is, like, we've got to be constantly moving.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you get blood clots. Like, they talk about when you fly, make sure you get up and walk right. to the bathroom.
Sitting too long.
Or even just sitting at a desk. Yeah. A lot of us are sitting at desks right now.
We become sedentary.
You got to get up and move, my friend. We got to move. We got to get on that actual treadmill. We got to lift some weights. We got to do some HIIT training, high intensity interval training. We got to go for a walk. We got to jog. We got to move, my people.
We have to move. Yes, we have to move. How's he doing now?
Oh, he's good now.
Okay. He's okay that you told that story?
He going to have to be.
He doesn't listen, so he won't know.
God bless him. Like, you know, okay. In those moments when, you know, your kid is sick, like, that brings you close to God, you know. And thankfully, he's bouncing back. He's resilient. My oldest son was there with him. My wife was with him. And my oldest son was holding it down. He's communicating with me while I'm rushing back from New York City. And I get there, and he's got everything under control.
Aww.
But within 5 minutes, he sees Dad's there. Now he can relax. And baby, big boy started crying. Yeah, he's Dad, I
thought
was so
that's where
scared.
You were going. Yeah.
I was so scared.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I listen.
Aww.
Yeah. So stay out of those hospitals. One of the ways you do it is by moving.
Move. Eat real food. So we were talking about food and how it's processed here in the United States and how some of that same food is banned in other countries. Eat real food. including protein and fat.
Yeah.
Now, I know we have some specialized diets for different reasons. Some of it is by choice and some of it is for other health reasons. But if you're choosing a vegetarian or a vegan lifestyle or a dairy-free lifestyle, just keep in mind that whatever you're missing, the good things that you're missing from limiting your diet, you have to find replacements for that.
Yeah.
So if you're not a meat eater, you got to find your protein somewhere else.
Now, when we talk about real food, what is real food? Like, some of us might not even know what real food is. I mean,
right.
It's stuff that is from the earth or was standing on the earth.
It is not coffee meat.
Yeah. It is not Pillsbury biscuits.
It's as close. There's this trend now for restaurants farm to table.
Yeah.
So it's fewer steps from where it was grown or raised in the case of animals or fish to it being on your table.
Yeah. No, that's a fact.
If it's bright and colorful, it's probably has added dyes, added sugar. It's a bunch of stuff that's been added.
What about
or
salmon?
Nutrients
salmon is
or
like colorful. Like,
it can be, but I get confused between the wild caught versus the farm raised. I don't know.
Wild caught is probably closer to the farm, for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think when they're raising fish on a farm, the fish are just sitting there eating and barely moving. Like, that's how I get so fat.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad you know.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I know about these things. I don't always abide by
them.
right. Yeah, so Whole Foods. So I always say, like, when you're at the grocery store, focus on the outside perimeter of the grocery store.
Yep, that's the fresh stuff.
Instead of the middle aisles of the grocery store.
That's all boxed and processed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So, you know, like, you walk in the grocery store, you're walking right into the fresh fruit usually. I'm hoping you're not in a food desert where there's no fresh fruit in your grocery store, but you go there, you're walking right into the produce.
Yeah, I would also say real food doesn't have a long shelf life.
Yeah.
Foods that have a longer shelf life, they do so because they have preservatives that make them last longer.
Yeah.
So.
And on that note, a small ingredient list is better than a long one.
Exactly. I remember, so I'm going to talk about ice cream. I remember seeing a Breyers ice cream commercial back in the day where they talked about this one ingredient that was in every other ice cream, monosodium glutamate or something like that. And they were like, milk, cream, sugar. It was like four or five ingredients. And I was like, so from that point on, I was biased towards Breyers ice cream.
Because they don't have MSG or whatever.
Correct. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, my point, your point.
Make your own ice cream, but use milk from Canada, I guess. But let's talk about
For some of us, just skip the ice cream. But
yeah,
that's.
But sugar, I'm just gonna tell you, like,
sugar
and caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to limit that as much as possible.
Why are you getting in my business?
Listen, you're talking about the sugar king right here. Like,
it's one cup of coffee, half decaf.
Mm.
But with Coffee Mate and sugar.
I'm stepping on some toes here.
But that's every day.
Mm.
Yeah, I might have to be a tea drinker.
Yeah.
Or not. Just water. All right. Some of the other things he pointed out. Eat at the same time every day and try not to snack in between.
Ugh. Now, can I snack at the same time every day?
Sure. I don't know. We didn't talk about it, but it's really, I think the challenge with snacks is that we do mindless snacking.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Even if you're eating snacks that are considered healthy, it has something to do with your metabolic health. In fact, what he said was when you eat is as important as what you eat for optimal metabolic health. I thought that was really interesting.
Now, was he an advocate for, like, stop, like, your last meal at, like, 6 p.m. or something crazy?
He did talk about, he did not address, like, intermittent fasting, but okay. He did say it's good to have your last meal 3 hours before you go to bed or longer.
Yeah.
So within the 3-hour window of going to sleep, not a good time to be eating, snack or otherwise, healthy snack or otherwise, just water.
And on the note of sleep.
On the note of sleep. He shared the results of a sleep study, but the bottom line is that adequate sleep significantly improves your cognitive abilities.
Mm. That's facts.
most of us don't get nearly enough sleep.
And you can't catch up on sleep.
You cannot catch up on sleep. It is not a thing to say, oh, I stayed awake for 2 days straight, or I pulled 2 all-nighters. You know, you college students out there, whoever else might be cramming for finals or wrapping up that situation, you cannot catch up on sleep. You cannot get that time back.
Yeah.
You may feel like it temporarily, but you can't get it back. So a lot of longevity and the quality of life, if we have longevity, has to do with our cognitive abilities. And on that note, someone asked him specifically about his thought on vaccines.
Mm.
I thought this conversation was going in a certain political direction, and it did not. And he said it. He said, vaccines, yes, because most vaccines are protecting you from diseases and illnesses that cause inflammation, including inflammation of the brain.
Mm.
Inflammation, the foods and the conditions that cause inflammation are probably after sugar and inadequate sleep, are probably things that are contributing to our poor quality of life.
Mm.
It was really fascinating stuff.
Yeah. So those are all the treadmills, y'all. We got the work treadmill that you got to get off at some point, and that's going to need a plan.
Yeah.
We've got the tuition treadmill that some of us are on, and we just got to figure out how to run on it a little smoother.
We just got on and just turned it on, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
And then we've got this health treadmill.
The actual treadmill. We gotta move.
Stay on it.
We gotta move. We gotta watch what we eat. We gotta sleep.
Yeah.
Basic things, right?
Yeah.
Why is it so hard?
Important.
Why is it so hard? These are very simple things.
So important. Thanks for listening. The show will be back next week. I will try to convince Andrea to join us again.
We'll see. I got duped into this. I can't even call it 3.5. I wasn't duped. I willfully participated in this fourth episode. Yeah.
And listen, if you want Andrea back next week, feel free to tweet us. Feel free to go on our Instagram, make comments, send us instant messages, DMs, okay? All the things, call the office, go
all
on the website.
Feedback.
Momentum-advisors.com/contact, go on there. Give us all the feedback, and we're going to try to see if we can get our guest host to return.
We'll see.
And we'll see you next week. I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
Momentum.